Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, I'm so happy that I'm inside my house here with air conditioning, as is a, warning out there. Well, hot and humid. I haven't stepped out, but I understand it's at least 90 degrees here in New York City. So, well, what happens with people in New York when it gets hot? One of the places that they go to is up in the mountains, the Adirondack Mountains. It used to be just to the Borscht Belt, and I think that wasn't north enough. So we're up back at the Adirondacks. And one of the best places to get the whole, like, history, lay of the land, etc., is by going to the Adirondack Museum. So we're going to have Todd Happer on to kind of tour us around. Maybe, we'll see, there's 22 buildings. We'll see how many he can take us around. Well, hello, Todd.
Hi, how are you, Merle?
Oh, just great. So, well, we got through, huh?
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad we're able to do this. So what I'd like to do first, kind of give us a little short summary of what the museum is about, and then we'll go on a little tour.
Sure. Well, the museum's been around for, I think it's its 57th season this year, and when it was started, the idea was to have a place to preserve the history of the Adirondack region, which going back, you know, to the 1800s through the late 19th century, the beginning of some conservation efforts that Theodore Roosevelt was involved in, and several people in New York City made some changes in this region that are really kind of unique in the U.S. And in the world, and have been a model for preserving wilderness areas. And so the idea was to open a museum that kind of talked about that history, and over the years it's also grown into a wonderful place that tells a lot of the stories of folks who live here year-round, folks who come up for the summer, folks who pop in on their way from, say, Montreal to New York City. And it touches really all aspects of life in the Adirondacks, and not even just life for people, even the life of many of the animals, some animals that we like to catch and eat, and other animals that scurry around. So it's a very all-encompassing view of this really special part of the world, special part of New York State. And by coming here and going through all the exhibits and participating in the programs, you can really walk away with a great understanding of people's place in the natural environment, and our place as we start working on what I call future history. So we also address some of the issues that are facing wilderness and environment areas, and some of the decisions that people need to make about how to treat this incredible state resource.
Okay, so when this was built, I mean, has this expanded from, like, how many buildings to now 22, I believe?
It has. The on this site, which in the pre-European settlement history had been a hunting area for different Native American tribes, but never a place that anybody settled because it really was difficult to get from one end to the other because the mountains are so tall. And, of course, in the winter, it's not a great place to live. There's not a lot of food to catch if you're dependent on that, and it can get very, very cold. But people have been living in the place for thousands of years, and it wasn't until the early 1800s that settlers started moving in from New York City area, Connecticut area, and starting to do things like trapping and logging. And this site that we're on is on the side of a mountain, on the side of a mountain that's called Blue Mountain. And it was a logging operation that then kind of turned into a tourist attraction. The logger guy had some people knock on his door and said, hey, can you, you know, put us up while we are out hunting? What was happening was in the mid-1800s, tourism as we know it today didn't really exist. Certainly was something that only the wealthiest people did to go other places for fun and enjoyment and relaxation. But this was one of the first places that tourism started, largely folks coming up from New York City and from Boston to the mountains to hunt and fish. And the logging camp over time got turned into a hotel, and it was a fabulous, luxurious hotel, and people would spend an entire day getting from the city to here by steamboat and train because the setting was so beautiful and the air was so clean, and it became a very, you know, it was a watering hole. It was a place where the wealthiest classes of society could escape to when there was great summer heat. So our season typically starts in late May to this day and continues through about October. And that's very much an echo to what it sounds like you're experiencing down there this afternoon.
Yeah, wait, wait. What's the temperature now up there?
In the high 60s. Beautiful.
Right
sunny.
Now?
Yeah. So it's very pleasant and very warm, but it's not oppressive like it might be if you were...
Like
you were
right here where it's like 90 degrees and
exactly.
Scorching. And okay.
So on our site, there was a very fancy hotel, and it burned down, as many of these wooden structures did, sometime, I think, in the 30s or 40s. I'm sorry, I'm rather new here, so I don't know all the history. But on the property, it was donated to this historical association that was founded in mid-century, and there was one remaining building, a log hotel, and so that formed the base around which the museum started telling the story of the place, and then they built a big building to house exhibits in, and some of the collection of great boats and stagecoaches and railroad locomotives. And from that one building, as more and more people started coming to the museum in the 50s and 60s, additional buildings were constructed to house more exhibits, tell more stories. And then they started bringing in buildings that came from different parts of the Adirondack Park. So there's a cottage that was used by an artist, and they... it's got lots of windows up high, which is unusual for the Adirondacks, and they moved it here. And there's a schoolhouse that got moved here, and that's where we do a lot of our programs for children and families. There's a fire tower, which were used in the Adirondack Mountains for spotting forest fires back when lumbering was a very big industry here. They would climb up and just watch for smoke so they could go start trying to fight fires and save the forests if one happens. So a fire tower got moved here, and people can climb up it. It's probably about 200 feet high maybe, and it's on top of a hill, so you get a really good view of all the surrounding lakes and hills and mountains. So there's a lot of buildings that are dotted on our 30 acres that we have here on the mountainside of Blue Mountain, looking down over the very beautiful island-filled, deep blue Blue Mountain Lake.
Are you there?
Oh, I am.
Okay.
So altogether, there's over 20 different buildings. Many are, you know, as small as a one-room cabin that you can go inside and see how people might have roughed it. up to.
Why don't we kind of like take a. All right, so I'm popping in there, as a tourist, and I want to go on a tour. Let's hear like what the tour is like what's, you know, the buildings and like what I would see.
Well, you would come into our main entrance area where you get your map and tickets and things like that. Is kind of a nice setup for the entire experience. It's done in the vernacular of Adirondack rustic architecture. There's a lot of use of tree trunks. A lot of things are built out of logs. There's a lot of use of stone. There's a lot of interior decoration that is maybe a hallmark of the Adirondack interior design, meaning we have a lot of heads that are stuffed and on walls. There's a lot of animals that are cute but motionless, scattered around some of the different buildings. You might find stuffed squirrels, stuffed beavers, stuffed moose, stuffed birds, ducks and loons, and things like that. It's very much like people's homes here. And so as you walk into it, you're kind of overwhelmed, one, with the big buildings, which echo back to the big hotels and the big family compounds that the tycoons of industry built up here on the lakes. Huge mansions they would build, and then all out of logs and decorated with the kind of the rustic look. And then on their properties, they would have these guest houses and sometimes very elaborate places. There might be a whole building just dedicated to the casino, or a whole building just dedicated to the pool house. And so that's kind of what you would see when you walk through here, is a trip through different architectural styles from the Adirondack, and then inside them you'll find any variety of things. There's exhibitions about preparing food in the wilderness from the times when before there were modern conveniences like gas and electric and running water. And the exhibit will explain a little bit about how families, when they were out camping, might have cooked food, or how early loggers all had a cook, and then they'd come in after a hard day's work, and the types of food that they'd eat, to the very fancy five-star food that was available at the hotels for the wealthy set. So that's just an all-in-one exhibit about food and eating in the Adirondacks. And then you can walk into another big log building and learn all about the logging industry and what lumberjacks did and how forests grow and the role that fire played in maybe decimating acres and acres of mountains worth of trees, and what companies did to reseed those forests if they burned down or after they had gone through and logged them. Then there's another whole exhibition about the role that water plays in the Adirondacks, both in its history and today. Before there were cars, before there were even railroads, people only had the rivers to navigate through this 6 million acre area that we call the Adirondacks now. If you think about it, this park is bigger than Connecticut and Rhode Island and Massachusetts put together. It's huge.
Wow.
And the only way to get from one end to the other was on the rivers. So the boat was a very important part of living here and commerce and all the emerging industry. And it continues to this day with the recreation economy. There is tons and tons of beautiful, unspoiled places that you can get to, in some cases can only get to, by having a canoe or a kayak. And there's water trails. You can travel 900 miles starting in the park and going all the way up into Canada just on your canoe. So there's a whole exhibition that talks about the role of water in the historical part of the Adirondacks, or the historical piece of learning about the Adirondacks, and then also how water is used today. There's some lakes that are very popular with jet skiers and water skiers, and there's other lakes that are, you know, no motors are allowed. It's only for kayaking and paddling around. There's a whole tradition of sailing on one of the lakes in particular. Upper St. Regis Lake is where some of the super wealthy people from New York settled. You know, one guy built a camp, and then all his friends came up and built camps. And they liked to sail, but the winds are tricky in the mountains. So they built a special kind of sailboat that is super light, much lighter than the Newport, Rhode Island type of racing sailboats.
Right.
But they were able to go all up and down the Upper St. Regis using this special type of boat that only they were rich enough to afford. So there's a whole tradition and history of regatta racing that's surprisingly up in the middle of the mountains, which you normally don't think of. Then you might go into an exhibition that talks all about railroads, and once railroads were invented, how long it took, not very long, for them to start being used in the Adirondacks to conquer what had been a barrier to development, which was that people couldn't get from one place to the other very easily. So once you start building railroads and blasting tunnels through the side of a mountain, all of a sudden you can start getting to places where the fish are and where the logs are. And that also increased the existing industries of mining and lumber, as well as increasing, really forming the beginning of America's tourist economy, providing a place of great beauty and great restfulness for people to get away to. Now they could get to a lot more easily than they could when they had to only come up on a guide boat, or maybe even walking in some cases. Now it was pretty easy to take a train from New York to, say, Saratoga Springs, and then take another train up into the mountains. So there's exhibitions about that. There's exhibitions that you can walk to that show the history of quilting in the Adirondacks and the neat folk art that comes out of that tradition. There's a whole cottage that's left over from the early 20th century where all the furnishings inside are evocative of that Adirondack style, using natural materials. In many cases, it's wood, but in some cases, it's also animal. There's a few pieces of furniture that are made out of animal pieces. I'm talking about, maybe imagine an ottoman where the feet are the feet of a deer. A lot of the decorations are based on hunting type of experience. So you'll find a lot of, like I was saying earlier, there's a lot of mounted heads in this cottage that kind of talks about the decorative arts that come out of the folk art tradition that come out of the Adirondacks. And all the time that you're going from one of these buildings to another, you're walking on these beautifully manicured grounds. The founder of the museum, his wife, actually laid out the plan for the landscaping, and our grounds group continues a lot of her vision through to today, planting incredibly beautiful flowers and plants and taking care of them all season long. One of the things that's very interesting is we are just now getting our spring that probably the city had in March and April. So the wildflowers are coming up and some of the annuals are coming up because it's just now getting to be regularly warm enough that flowers can bloom. So it's a very compressed season here compared to what you're probably used to. But it's very beautiful set against the deep blue sky and the mountains in the background and the lake down below. It's just really an interesting experience, unlike any that you'll probably find anywhere else.
So if people are coming up for, let's say, fall foliage, we're looking like October, the earliest?
Again, it comes earlier here than you might be used to because of the way the temperature goes. So it starts getting cooler. The summer temperatures kind of start dying down by the middle of September. And the leaves start to turn, and I'm told that they really reach their peak in late September, early October, whereas you might experience that same thing happening in New York about 4 weeks later, maybe in mid of October to early November. So it really is, if people come come up like over the Labor Day weekend, you really start to see some amazing fall colors. And one of the nice things about it is all of the roads that are in the park, in the Adirondack Park, they're built on foothills of mountains. And so it's almost like being on a roller coaster. So you'll drive sometimes without even seeing another car. You'll drive for 20 minutes and the road twists and turns, and the speed limit's 55. So, you know, you might want to go over, but even if you're on the speed limit, it's like being on a roller coaster. Now imagine that all those trees ahead of you, in your rearview mirror, on both sides of you, with no other people or no other cars, imagine they're all starting to change color. So it's all around you, yellow, orange, brown, magenta. It's an amazing spectacle.
Wow. By the way, in terms of buildings, is a whole thing about lean-tos. What's that about?
Yeah. Lean-tos are I don't know how to describe it in a language outside of the Adirondack Park. I think it might be unique to this area. Most people today, and certainly going back to the era before indoor plumbing and modern conveniences, everybody has lean-tos. And what it is a three-sided structure that's basically just designed to keep a roof over your head, to keep rain out, to keep sleet out, and in the summer to keep the hot beating sun out. But one side is open. So they're used by campers have a place to sleep that is sheltered from any rain that might come during the night, but to still provide this amazing connection with nature. So they're raised up off the ground, and they've got two sides and then a back, and then the roof slopes overhead so that it's narrower in the very back of the lean-to, and it's taller at the front. So you might be able to stand up at the front of it, but toward the back it's maybe only 4 feet high. So this provides a place that can be a home base for folks that are out fishing, or that maybe, let's say you had one in your backyard, it might be a place where the grown-ups could kind of sit and have a drink while the kids were splashing around in the water. It can be a place that could be right next to your barbecue, and you want to sit down and enjoy your meal without being in the hot sun. So it's kind of a all-purpose shelter that's used for recreation purposes, and all good homes, all well-equipped homes in the Adirondacks seem to have them and have for several centuries. So we have a couple examples of that on the grounds that, you know, you can go into, kind of lay down on a chaise lounge, relax a little bit, enjoy the good view. And then there's a couple smaller scaled ones for kids to play in, and so our educators stock those with them. Like things that you would find at a campfire. So it'll be real coffee pots that they can pretend to make coffee over the fire. There'll be place settings. They can pretend like they're having a meal, pretend like they're cooking up the fish that they caught in a cast iron skillet. So it's a neat place to introduce folks that may not be familiar with this wonderful lean-to tradition to walk inside one and take souvenir pictures in. And I see a lot of these posted on Facebook of people grinning out from inside the lean-to.
Did the people ever, like, have, like, tried to do as fancy ones to represent that they, you know, had money or things like that, or that kind of thing?
Well, some of them do, and there's a related type of a structure called a platform tent. And it was, imagine maybe a large room-sized box where there's a nice wood floor and it's raised up off the ground, and then there's a wall about 2 feet high going all the way around. And then on top of that, you just sling some canvas over an A-frame, which provides you an instant shelter, again, from the elements or from the sun. And both of these types of structures could be built, like anything could, with varying degrees of luxury. So you can definitely today find custom builders of lean-tos, and you could use really fancy types of wood and put, you know, cork or bamboo flooring on it. You can put draperies around them that have really thick damask-type textures and colors to them. There are lean-tos that have wireless routers in them, so you can bring your laptop out. They can be wired for electricity, so you can have a little beer refrigerator. They really run the gamut, but a lot of people still just make them by hand with wood from their own property. So it kind of depends on the person, what type of lean-to they want to have in their backyard. We don't have a super luxury version here at the museum. I will say that one of the lean-tos and one of the platform tents have been decked out to be very, very nice. And again, I'm sorry I don't know all the detailed information.
Oh, no, I was just curious if people, let's say, that living in the Adirondacks might, have, fancy ones. So a far cry from you're sleeping in the doghouse.
Yeah. Yes, that can happen. And it's I imagine that it's something that you'd aspire to have. This is just our starter lean-to, but boy, one day we're going to have one with a big screen TV.
Yeah, I bet. Now let's go to activities. Tell me about what type of activities there are.
Well, we have every day there's probably five or six things going on that our education staff can do with you as a visitor when you come. We have a pond that has a boat, and you can go row. They'll row you around the pond, so you can go from one side to the other, kind of coast along some of the lean-tos that we were just talking about, and platform tents, and imagine that you were 100 years ago going from your lake to your neighbor's lake, the next lake over, and in that pond, it's stocked with different kinds of trout from the Adirondack area, and every day there's a feeding at noon, so you can basically throw pellets at fish, and they, because they're fish, get hungry, and so they'll start jumping up out of the water and making a great photo-taking opportunity. So you can come here and feed our fish. At our little schoolhouse, we have all sorts of toys that were common in maybe the 1870s up through the 1910s and 20s. There's a lot of hoops with sticks and stilts that kids can walk on, and ring toss games and horseshoe games and things like that. And it's funny, you say the names of those toys, and as grown-ups now we kind of think, oh, you know, that's like so old-fashioned, kids wouldn't want to play with that. It is amazing for kids today, because they haven't grown up hearing maybe their parents talk about playing with those things. It's so new to them, and it's very physical, and it's not on a computer screen, and they will spend hours investigating these games, trying their skills, learning how to do them, becoming masters at it, organizing their own competitions. They really, really have fun, as you would expect when you think about doing these things that their great-great-grandparents probably were enjoying in the 1860s.
Yeah, we saw, I remember seeing something, what was that, like just a stick and a hoop?
Yeah.
The
idea is to make it run for a really, really long time without it falling over. So if you can imagine a hula hoop, think about if you just gave it a push, how long would it go before it fell over? Not very far. But if you run alongside it with the stick, if you give it a tap every now and then, you can keep it going uphills, downhills, around curves, and there's quite a bit of skill involved. And the kids' kinesthetic learning picks that up, and they want to do it until they can be really, really good at it.
I remember that. Another one? Was there another one?
Another game?
Yeah.
That the kids play? Beanbag toss, taking beanbags and trying to get them into a hole that's 30 feet away. The one that I like to try, even with my suit and tie on, is the stilts. Sticks that have little platforms built about 6 inches off the ground that you step up onto and then try and walk. and then try and turn around. Try and stand on one stilt and raise the other one up. Try having a race with them on. Who would think that something as simple as wooden stilts could entertain today's 10-year-old for more than 3 minutes? It is amazing to watch them try and figure out what they're supposed to do. Work with our staff to understand kind of what kids were doing 100 years ago with these, and then give them ideas for things they can try and see how good they get at it.
Wow, that's really great. So there's plenty to do. Would you say like a day there? And by the way, let's say if you can't spend the whole day, do you get a ticket that allows you to come back another day?
We do. Yeah, we have a neat program where, let's say you're up here for a week and you come here at 1 o'clock. The museum unfortunately closes at 5, but there's plenty to do here for 4 hours. And then if you want to come back, you can use your ticket or your receipt from your ticket for the next 7 days to come back in for free.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Yeah. This way, if you don't want to spend the entire day there because you have someplace else to go or whatever, you can spend, pick the number of hours and then come back and complete whatever you want to do.
Yes, and it also is a really good insurance policy for in case it rains and cancels your hiking or canoeing plans for a later day, you can just come back here. Although we have a lot of stuff outdoors, we also have acres under a roof. So if it ends up raining or storming, this can be a good option to come back to. Or if it's...
You would stay in a lean-to.
You could, because you are sheltered from the elements if you're in a lean-to. And some of ours have those fabric walls, so you could even close those off and be very protected from windy rain. And
How about any place to eat?
We do have a cafe, which is it's in a building that's perched on the side of a cliff, and so you end up being almost like you're in a bird's nest looking out over Blue Mountain Lake below you. Incredible, incredible views of all the islands and the twists and turns of the lake shore, and because we are set on a mountainside, we're surrounded by woods, and there's a lot of binoculars that we even hang in the cafe because the entire space is covered wrapped in windows, so that when you look out, it's like you're in a treehouse, and there's a lot of birds that can be spotted while you're sitting there enjoying your lunch. And then there's a lot of activity happening down on the lake. There occasionally deer who will walk by, and so the binoculars are really handy to help you get a better look at what you might hear tweeting or hooting at you, and then you can see what's going on some of the islands down below in terms of wildlife or people life. It's a really, really neat experience to be able to be enjoying a break, having dessert or coffee or a sandwich or soup or something, surrounded by nature.
So there's both hot food, sandwiches, and...
Yeah, there's there's specials every day. It's a full kitchen. There's prepared things that you can duck in. It's also very nice because if you are heading out, if you come for the morning and then have lunch, you can grab stuff, take it in the car with you so that you don't have to worry about finding food somewhere on the way to your next destination.
Finding food foraging for food, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. Oh, just some berries. Let's pick some berries.
I know our ancestors were very good at foraging, and we're very big on
them. They were very good or very good?
Very good. But sometimes, if you've got a schedule, it can be difficult to stop and find enough food in the woods to eat.
Just so, would you I had commented that this is when you come up to the Adirondacks, this would probably be one of the first places to go to to get the whole sense of the history and the lay of the land. Would you agree if that's, and then everything else can make more sense?
I would. If you've never been here before, or if you were here when you were a kid, or even if you come up every single summer, having a sense of the lake that you're staying at, or where is the hotel that you're staying at, or are you traveling from Buffalo to Lake Placid in the park, what you get here is you get a really good introduction to the entire 6 million acre park, why it exists the way that it does, and ideas for other things that you could do. And one of my favorite parts is there's a giant map of all the different mountain peaks and rivers and lakes. So you can, let's say you were staying at Lake Speculator. You can push a button for that, and the giant map, a little light will come up, and then you can push another button for Whiteface Mountain, and another light will come up, and you can start to see how far apart they really are, and you could see why the roads are where they are, because they can only be in the mountain valleys. So you have to take kind of not a direct path like you can in the city from one place to the other. You have to take a winding road, which is a wonderful thing about any vacation or leisure time, is getting a chance to kind of just meander through here and there surrounded by amazing scenery. And if you wonder, you know, why the park exists as a park, it can start to become clear to you. One of the really foresighted things that our great-grandparents did is to say, and it's in the New York State Constitution, this space is going to be forever wild. The state-owned lands can't be leased. They can't be sold. They have to belong to the state, and they were doing that because back in the 1860s, 70s, and 80s, a lot of the logging operations that were here were starting to clog up all of the streams and tributaries to the Hudson River, and it was starting to fill up New York Harbor with all the sediment that was running down off the mountains that had been stripped of their trees. And so it was wanting to preserve the quality of the very deep, very economically profitable New York Harbor that led to people saying, hey, that's enough strip mining and that's enough logging up there because you're really messing stuff up down here. And, of course, since the Hudson River starts here, a lot of the drinking water for the city and places in Pennsylvania and New Jersey originates in the mountains up here and in the Catskills. And that park, the Catskills Park, is also a state constitutionally protected wildlife area, wilderness zone, where economic and industrial development is really, really limited and tightly monitored and strictly controlled, so that we have a place that is going to provide clean, fresh water and provide a lot of recreation facilities for people from throughout the state, throughout the world.
That's fabulous. Oh, by the way, the chickens want to say hello to you.
I love the chickens. How are Ethel and Esther?
Oh, Esther and Eunice are doing
fine. Eunice, that's right.
Esther and Eunice are doing fine.
I'm glad they survived.
I think they're still in shock, though.
Well, for your listeners who don't know, I know that the Esther and Eunice took a ride on a recreation of one of the early roads in the Adirondacks. Before we had pavement and blacktop, roads very often were made of tree trunks that were laid end to end. And they call that a corduroy road because very much like the material in our fabric today, the corduroys was just a bunch of half circles right next to each other. So if you can imagine going over a stagecoach and something like that, it was very, very bumpy. But it's the only way they could think of before trains to get from one place to the other was to make a road out of tree trunks. So I think it was definitely an image seared into my head when the chickens fell out of a vehicle and then got run over by the very vehicle in which they were riding. But I'm glad to hear that they did survive and don't bear any ill will toward the museum.
Have you gotten to see their blog yet?
I did, and I'm glad that the incident is preserved for posterity there.
Yeah, me too. Well, I know they had a good time, even though jokingly one of them was hung with the noose.
Yes, we do have an exhibit where people can tie nautical knots.
Unfortunately, though, I had to give a title of it, Choking the Chickens.
Oh, yes, it's a family website, right?
It will not be clear. If you don't know what it means, it doesn't matter. That's funny because I asked some people and they said they didn't know what it means. I went, okay, I was just curious. You know. Well, I certainly get to have fun. But anyhow, well, let's see. The T-shirt. That's right. I'm supposed to get it. Did you send me the T-shirts so I could show off?
I did not. But like I said, okay. I'm new at the museum. I do know how to mail packages now. So I will definitely be sending those out this week.
Oh, okay. And you said you were able to get a DVD or something?
Yes. I think
I want to throw in, by the way, that you can... there's an audio tour as well.
There is. There is a lot of people who grew up in the Adirondack area and a lot of people who come here every year for the summer or come to the park during the winter for skiing and bobsledding. Many of those people lent their voices to an audio tour that relates to many of the exhibitions that we talked about earlier. So in the logging exhibit, there'll be a sign that says, okay, this is number 15. So as you're walking through the logging exhibit, if you press number 15, you'll hear Dan Moore, who today is a logger and has spent his career cutting down trees for lumber mills and paper mills and things like that, talk about how the lumbering industry has changed during the past 10 or 15 years. And what his day's like and what his hopes and plans are for the Adirondack region. There's people who are boat builders. They actually make boats out of wood. There's people who are wintertime skiers, and they'll talk a lot about their favorite mountains. And so every place that we have an exhibition that's got artifacts and dioramas and audio recordings and films and movies and things like that, you can also hear the perspective of a real person who's living today and what today's Adirondacks mean for them in relation to the subject of the exhibit that you're in. So that's free with every admission, and you get the little audio wand that you carry around with you and just push whatever button you're standing next to and learn a little bit more. So we do have that on a thumb drive that I just need to put onto a CD for you, and then everything you experienced, you'll have at your house next week.
Oh, goody, goody. Okay. Well, I so appreciate your calling in and finally being able to get through.
Yes. We had quite a bit of a storm yesterday.
And I think we're probably going to be getting a couple here. So, I guess maybe the rain might ease up the heat here. I'm not sure, but...
Oh, I hope so. I know that's miserable.
I'm still not going out. all right. So I'll await the items and learn even more. And right now my blog for the Adirondacks, I'm up to the last day, and this is turning into a mini book.
Because you saw so much?
Because there's just so much to write, and it's not like I'm going to write like two sentences about every place I go to. So it's become and probably by the end of the week I should have it all up there with photos. So
very cool.
Okay.
That's
so
great.
In the meantime, have a great day, and thanks a whole bunch for speaking with us.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, and I just invite anyone who's even a little bit interested in learning more about the Adirondacks to go to our website. It's if it's okay to say, it's
sure.
ADKMuseum.org. ADK is a abbreviation that is used up here for the word Adirondacks. So you see it on people's cars, and that turned into our website, ADKMuseum.org. And that has tons of online articles and exhibitions, so you can learn a lot before you even come. But I hope everybody does at some point in their life, hopefully this year, get a chance to visit the Adirondacks.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you,
Merle.
Have a great day again. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, bye, everybody.